You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
We want to lead all our deals. We want to do the most due diligence, build the highest degree of conviction, and we want to go in and get really involved operationally.
Welcome to FinTech Fun. FinTech Fun is a podcast where Australian fintechs come to share their stories.
Hi, it's Chris Titley here as part of the FinTech Fun podcast. I'm with Max Korsman from Tidal Ventures. Max, thanks so much for joining and being part of this series.
Thanks very much for having me on for a chat, Chris.
Max, let's learn a little bit about yourself, mate, and also Tidal Ventures and their involvement in the fintech sector.
Yeah, awesome. So I joined Tidal Ventures almost 2 years ago now. Have long been interested in fintech personally. So my background from the early days, you know, commerce and law in terms of university, spent some time in a corporate advisory firm, sitting on the other side of the table from where I sit now. And so, you know, in those days, I was helping founders to optimize their capital raising processes. Got to work with a few quite early fintech businesses that have actually, you know, become quite large fintech businesses, you know, today. And that's over the course of, you know, the last 5, 6, 7 years. Then moved into management consulting at Bain & Company. Managed also within, you know, the consulting world to spend some time working on the strategy for one of the big banks in this country. Also working with a payments and software business on its strategy and growth. And so, you know, I've always had, I guess, an interest in and tried to direct my focus in my professional career towards sort of the intersection of finance and technology. Outside of work, I've, you know, enjoyed being a part-time trader on the share markets, grew up, you know, around a small family business, and always had an interest in that side of things as well. So yeah, as I sort of said, joined Tidal a couple of years ago. And at the time we were sort of just kicking off the investment of our second seed fund. That was a $30 million seed fund. And we have always had, I guess, a thematic and a thesis around fintech, in particular around fintech infrastructure. Given it's kind of an area of personal interest, I'm really excited to be digging deeper into that space, you know, over time. We have some really interesting investments in that fintech space, including Frankie One, which I think people will know quite well, which has been one of the sort of early success stories of the fund. You know, businesses across fintech infrastructure, transactional fintech, so carded as an e-commerce transactional fintech business that's really interesting. A couple more recent investments in sort of vertical software that also involves an embedded finance offering. So a business called Loopit and a business called RenewTrack, which is a workflow automation software that involves a fintech component. And so have always had a strong thesis within Tidal around the fintech space and the infrastructure space and the trends that we're seeing evolve in that space. We're coming to the tail end of that seed fund and have recently come to market to announce our next seed fund. And that's going to be an $80 million seed fund. So a much larger pool of capital. What we've definitely seen over the last few years together as a fund is that with the kind of proliferation of talent, multi-time founders, evolution of the ecosystem and maturity of the ecosystem in Australia, we've been really impressed with the founders that we're seeing more and more. We've seen seed rounds sort of increase in size, you know, sometimes justified by that multi-time founder background, the really interesting huge markets that, that people are attacking, but also definitely in the fintech space that there's that extra capital required to address that regulatory and risk component of building a fintech business and getting from, you know, zero to a post-product and approved regulatory sort of position. And so what really excites me about our next fund is our ability to actually go in harder in that really early stage, pre-product, pre-seed, pre-revenue, through to that core seed stage and across that seed phase, as we like to describe it, to really be able to like play a bigger role in some of those larger seed rounds that we're now starting to see in market as well.
And with that infrastructure style embedded finance, I suppose thematic, is the idea mm-hmm. then to mix some of those investments together, like one provider uses another, or you might get color over what is happening in terms of the broader market?
Yeah, we absolutely want to like have our learnings compound. You know, we don't force our portfolio companies to become each other's customers, but certainly when we do see opportunities, we want to encourage that. One of the great things I think about that infrastructure thematic is what it's really being built upon, right? Is this emerging model that we're seeing around the ability to partner, the ability to use that infrastructure to unbundle finance offerings and finance products. And a lot of that is driving what we're seeing in market on the consumer side, which is now it's kind of never been easier to offer a consumer fintech experience, right? Because you can rent and use other, you know, banking infrastructure, other product infrastructure. And that's been really exciting and awesome to see. And as you know, you have great coverage of kind of the partnerships that you see in market. We really think it's a space that's ripe for that level of partnership and the creation of those consumer-facing businesses. But I would say at Tidal, we're not focused on that consumer side of the offering. We're more focused on that infrastructure side of the offering. So we are largely B2B software investors, and our focus is very much on delivering a great experience, either for that developer customer or for that business customer, in terms of our focus on the products that we'd like to see being built in market.
And Max, when Tidal makes an investment in a business, generally what sort of sizes? You mentioned about the seed fund. Is it only seed fund, and do you follow on? And again, from your company point of view, the value add that you provide when you make an investment?
Yeah, great question. So we operate sort of two core funds. We operate a seed fund, as I mentioned, and we also have a pool of follow-on capital that is largely not set out for net new investing. But is there to support our best seed assets as they progress and to continue to support them in their growth rounds, those Series A, B, and C rounds, where we feel the companies have found that product market fit and found that go-to-market fit, where they're able to see that really nice repeatability and velocity in the way that they're attracting customers. And so in terms of our focus on net new investing, as I sort of said, it is generally in that seed stage. We think of that as kind of the journey to those three things, right? One, it's starting to build a really strong team. So you start off a founder or a couple of founders, and by the end of that seed stage, you're starting to build capability in the business. Secondly, it's product market fit. So testing those hypotheses, having those early conversations with customers, going from pre-product to product in market, and really starting to find that pool of customer interest and engagement. And thirdly, it's that go-to-market fit piece. And so that is testing your different ways that you can attract customers and acquire customers, and really starting to find and flex that repeatable and scalable way to attract new customers. And so when Tidal gets involved in investing, we've done checks as small as 300, 400K for very early businesses, pre-product, pre-revenue, all the way up to 2.5, 3 million. And we'll look to extend that maximum first check size up to 4, 5 million in this next fund. And the way we actually construct our portfolios, we don't do a lot of deals. So under about 10 a year in terms of a seed fund. So that's quite a concentrated portfolio at seed for a VC fund in Australia. And the reason for that is we want to lead all our deals. We want to do the most due diligence, build the highest degree of conviction, and we want to go in and get really involved operationally. And so I spend a lot of my time, I think relative to some of my peers in venture funds, working really closely and directly with founders. We want to lean in on kind of those key three areas, right? So helping build out that team, having that real product focus and being investors with an operational background that can lean in on product and help founders work through the IDMAs and build out an exceptional product that their customers love. And then also building out that really scalable, repeatable go-to-market. And so our work with founders, we like to say it's not just at the board level, although we do like to say take board seats. It's very much between the board meetings. And so we get quite involved in helping founders, you know, raise the next round, set out their planning and KPIs and financial model to map out what they want to achieve in, you know, a given phase of that business growth, but also around articulating their product horizons, building out their product roadmap, mapping out, you know, the right way to build a growth function. And so, you know, we lean in on all of those things.
And we're here in late July of 2022, and I'm going to timestamp this and snapshot at where the market is in regards to VC funding. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of memes out there and a lot of social media commentary around the mindset of investors and, yep. And the profitability versus growth at all costs swings. Mm-hmm. Every investor's obviously different on that front. But what are you seeing in terms of your metrics, and what are you looking at now when a company comes to raise money?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's one of those things that I think everyone is talking about right now. You know, I'm loath to be, you know, one of those meme VCs that, you know, it is my first downturn cycle, and so I'm not out there to give generalized advice to founders. I think founders are the best position to understand what the impact of this market is going to be for them. But I'm very happy to talk very bluntly about what I'm actually seeing with the founders that I work with. And with founders that I'd been meeting with who were on a path to investing. And I would say very clearly that the one thing that has changed is that founders are being rewarded or punished much more with a greater degree of focus on capital efficiency. And so in, you know, the market, as it was kind of really strong and bubbling away in late 2021 and prior to that, you know, a really uninterrupted boom cycle, you had this sense of perpetuity going on in the market. Like there was going to be more capital and more growth and more capital and more growth. And what that gave founders, I think, the degree of latitude to do is to prioritize growth at all costs. And what we're seeing now is that actually capital-fueled growth is what VC investors are no longer willing to reward. So we're wanting to see business models that have an element of efficiency in their go-to-market approach and in how they grow and attract new customers. We're wanting to see ways that you can attract that customer without just throwing capital at chasing new customers. So whether that's really strong customer retention metrics, so net revenue retention over 100, you don't churn, your customers expand with you. Whether that's viral growth, ways that you can have product-led growth and find new customers through your own product rather than spending on sales and marketing. Those efficient customers and companies are the ones that are going to be rewarded in this market. And so there's a much more balanced focus, I think, around doing a bit more with less, finding that point of leverage where you're not spending an extra dollar to chase that extra dollar of growth.
And Max, before we get on that, yeah, no, I agree that capital efficiency and the idea of the ability to raise capital to fund future growth model is probably somewhat subdued compared to it was 12 months ago that, oh, well, you know, we've got 6 months, but that's okay because we're flying in terms of metrics and we can probably always get capital. But now that might have paused, so then that focus becomes more prevalent than ever. Before we get on to some fun questions, mate, one final question on the fintech thematic. Mm-hmm. What are you excited about over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think there's a few really interesting generational trends that I'm excited about. And they start at the consumer level. But again, I think our focus as investors is very much on the infrastructure that's going to underpin those things. So one of them, I think, is definitely the changing approaches within the consumer to things like ownership, to things like credit, to things like payments and investing. We've seen a massive democratization of investing. Businesses like Robinhood and more like sort of Stake and Superhero. We've seen a huge democratization around ownership, the emergence of subscription models. And I'm really excited in that respect about an investment we recently made in a company called Loopit that is providing, you know, picks and shovels, enabling technology to let brands offer car subscriptions to their customers, which is really interesting and exciting. And I think we'll see that subscription model play out as we have seen with Netflix and with, you know, a range of others. Even now your Uber Eats has a subscription model for your delivery. I think we'll see that continue to play out, and we'll see a continuation of a changing in attitude to having to own everything that we consume. I'm really interested in things like the future of loyalty and rewards programs. I'm interested in where payments are heading. So definitely those kind of changes that we're seeing in consumerization of fintech. But what are the enabling technologies that can support that? And so we've always had an interest in the fund in API infrastructure, We've had an interest in reg tech. You've got to enable products to get to market more quickly and more easily and transact with customers through KYC and AML and fraud and transaction monitoring and authentication. So those are definitely where I see opportunities in the next little period of time, particularly, I think, as Australia sort of progresses towards that NPP and open banking model that we've seen probably roll out a few years ahead of us in other markets.
Yeah, absolutely. Max, in and amongst all the companies that you see and all the diligence that you do, and when you want to switch off, do you get some downtime? What do you get up to outside of work?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, my favorite pastime is probably to play basketball. I used to be decent. Now much more a social basketballer, but very much enjoy getting
you,
out on the
court. I can't see you on Zoom, mate. Are you 6'4" or 6'10" or something like that?
None of those things. I'm 5'10", very much a point guard.
Do you follow the hoops? It seems like a lot of technology companies generally follow either the NBL or the NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a long-time NBA guy. I think got to see my first game over in the States in 2016 and I've always been a big basketball fan, but also love to get out on the slopes, play, just social, casual sport with friends. Big reader, I would say. Particularly interested in technology, but then also in macroeconomics and geopolitics and the way the world is changing and how that shapes the future. So read a lot in my spare time around that. And just also a big fan of music and gigs. Want to get out and see concerts and really enjoy that.
So on those three topics, I'm going to ask some questions. Josh Giddey, mate, next year going to be a big year for him?
I absolutely believe so. He's his ability to pass is extraordinary, and he sees the floor brilliantly. It's nice to see an Australian really succeed, and I think there's it's been amazing to see how many Australians now are consistently making it to the top levels of the game.
No, for sure. There's a new draft pick coming through as well for the Pelicans. Number two, your favorite book then, or one that you're reading right now?
Yeah, my favorite book ever is a book called Everybody Lies. I would think of it as kind of a new updated version of Freakonomics, let's say. It's by an author called Seth Stevens Davidowitz. And the core thesis that I think is fascinating and really interesting about it is it explores through internet data and probably search history mostly, the darker side of humanity. And so I think the author jokes in the book that he initially wanted to title the book How Large Is My Penis? But really the core thing is, you lie to yourself, you lie to your friends, you lie to your family, but there's a form of truth to what you might be only willing to Google at 3 o'clock in the morning when you can't sleep. And so it explores really interesting topics like, porn search history and why that comes to be, and abortion rates, sexuality. And it's a really interesting look into the side of humanity that we're quite reticent, I guess, to share quite publicly, and really interesting.
Sounds fascinating. The final question on the music front, your band that you listen to on Spotify on a weekly basis, or you jump into podcasts and things, but let's stick to the music, mate, your bands that you love.
Yeah, a big fan of Rufus Du Sol, the Australian kind of electronic producers. I have always been a big fan, and very much a lot of the music that I listen to is theirs, or is, in the same genre around sort of electronic, more melodic electronic or ambient electronic, and very, very big fan of that sort of music.
I'm getting into a band at the moment, which is an old band. Well, this all around everything out of Manchester. Little sort of not really, sort of indie poppy techno-y. It's kind of nice to look at some cool fintech news while I listen to a bit of indie pop techno. But mate, on that note, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast, the Fintech Fund podcast, and sharing the story of yourself, and there's also the intertwining with Tidal Ventures and what Tidal Ventures is doing. And congratulations on what you and your fund have been doing recently, and all the best for the future in regards to investment, and really look forward to catching up.
Thanks very much, Chris. Really appreciate you having me on.
For more information on Sub11, jump onto our LinkedIn or email me, chris@sub11.com.au. Thanks for listening.
Listen to the Unfunded podcast, brought to you by the Day One Network and hosted by me, tech writer Joan Westenberg. We're sharing the no-holds-barred, untold stories from entrepreneurs who have decided to build a business on their terms. I'll be interviewing successful founders and operators on the grit and ingenuity it takes to build and scale independent startups without the support of traditional venture capital funding. Subscribe to the Unfunded Podcast now, wherever you get your podcasts.